Welcome to another edition of Father Time. My guest today is Tom Everett Scott.
Yay.
See, I usually kind of tease it.
It's usually about 20 minutes in when
I'm not wasting time anymore because I realized everyone was reading it and they knew who the guest was long before they started listening. So I was really idiotic at some
point. Cut to the chase.
Your credit list is long and ridiculous, and I think most people know it. They're going to go, the guy from That Thing You Do.
That's right.
Boiler Room. La La Land. Academy Award winning film La La Land.
You can sing if you want.
No. No one needs to hear that.
But more importantly, you are the husband and the lead on I'm Sorry on True TV.
Yeah.
Which is where we kind of hung out. I play your coworker who has
an insanely funny show, I might add.
Gaping wound on my head. Yes,
we've known each other before that, though. We've seen each other around town. We have a mutual friend, Jay Larson,
is a mutual friend who's done this podcast.
Fantastic.
Another father.
He is.
So yeah, we don't even need to talk about all that stuff because it's mainly because it dawned on me that you have two children.
I do. I have two kids, and they're older. My daughter is 17, and my son is 12. He'll be 13 in October. Jay's kids are much younger. My son actually babysits Jay's.
Is that right?
Boy, uh-huh.
We need a babysitter. Is that right?
My daughter drives. I mean, she'll babysit.
Is that right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I think girls. I don't think I'll ever have a guy babysit my two daughters. Would you? Have you?
I haven't, but...
You played that off like it's not in your head at all times with a daughter that... Would you ever...
Would I ever have like a teenage boy like watch my 2 and 4-year-old... Girls? I mean, dude, if I knew the kid,
Do you really know anybody on this earth? I mean, it's always like, oh, he was such a good kid, and then, you know, oh, that happened.
Right. No, I mean, that situation hasn't come up, but it wasn't because I prevented it from happening.
just luck of the draw.
Yeah.
One of each.
I have one of each, yeah.
It's funny to look back because it's so, you know, you see people on TV, and all those movies you were working on, you had kids.
Yeah, most of them, I mean, since 2000.
Yeah.
Yeah. And my wife during that time, I mean, she went to school for acting. She didn't enjoy it, became a photography person, worked as a photo editor in magazines like Interview. She worked at Cosmo. She worked at 17. She was working in New York as a photo editor and then stopped to have kids. And now she's back in the art world. You know, at a certain point, she wanted to get back to work. But really, she was the support system and family that was around. We lived in New York until 2001.
Did you have, I mean, here's the deal. I had kids late. So when I was trying to act, it was like, the pressure is crazy without kids. Was it insane to like, after every job, be like, I got to get another job?
Absolutely. Yeah. Whenever I don't have work, I go into a fit of anxiety.
like every actor that's ever come before. So you were living in New York when you met your wife?
Yeah, we met in college. We met at Syracuse. We were both in the drama department there.
You dated the same girl from college on?
We didn't date in college. We dated after college, but we were friends. We've known each other since we were teenagers, basically. And it was in New York where... Because I always had a crush on her, but she always had a boyfriend. And then when we were in New York and we were doing theater there, that's when we started dating.
So you never even got to really enjoy the stardom to really just go out and just go to bars and have girls just throw themselves and, you know, random sex around the country. Like, you started having kids and that was it. I mean, it's like, it's terrible, man. What?
Yeah, random sex for me is like,
Tuesday.
yeah, exactly. Oh, okay. The kids are at school and we're home. Right, this is random.
It's so funny because this whole thing came about because by the time I had kids, I was an old man and all of a sudden I wasn't prepared mentally whatsoever. So I'm always amazed when I see someone who has their shit together so much that at a young age that they're comfortable enough to go, yeah, all right, let's make this work.
Yeah, well, I always knew that I was in love with this person. So when she was ready to do it, to settle down, I was like, let's go. I it's one thing that I just wasn't able to analyze and just jumped in. I don't know how that happened, really.
Random in our profession, especially to have like two people who are both in the actor field.
Yeah.
Get married and actually stay together. Typically, they get married for a year, they have some crazy fling, and then it's off. Because one person gets more successful, it gets to be a weird competition thing, and then...
Well, that's what was happening when we were dating, is that my career was taking off. She didn't have an agent. And knowingly hated the business. And I was like, yeah, you don't really seem to want to do this. And she said, you're right.
Was in college.
This was like right after college, when everyone's trying to make it as an actor after college, and things were happening for me. Nothing's happening for her. The phone's ringing off the hook for me and my career. And she's just like, oh, this is awful. But
it is awful.
But and I get it. But she quickly pivoted and found something she really loved.
Yeah.
And thrived at it. Did really well.
That's cool. Did you guys have kids right away?
No, we didn't. We waited. She went on a couple jobs. She shot something in South Africa. She got really sick. It was kind of scary. And when she came back and recovered, she said, you know what? Life's short. Let's have kids. That's how we kind of decided to have the first kid.
When you say we decided, she decided. The same way my wife decided.
Exactly.
She's like, hey, you know, the sexy talk would go from, hey, let's do this, to I'm ovulating. Get in here and let's procreate.
Right.
Yeah.
Let's make this happen now. Get in here.
You are originally from Boston as well, I take it.
Yeah, I grew up in East Bridgewater, Massachusetts, which is a suburb of Boston.
Brookline in the house?
Yeah, we're both Boston guys.
I didn't know. You're Brookline?
I'm New Hampshire.
Oh, which part?
Manchester. But I went to Boston, and as a kid, I was North Andover and Winchester. And my family's from Milton and Braintree.
Way.
Yeah, Red Sox. Braintree. That's how the Jay Larson connection.
Oh, got it. He's Stoneham.
Yeah.
Braintree was the closest.
He still has the thickest accent.
The thickest.
It's crazy, and it won't go away. I think now he's almost using it.
I think so.
Yeah, he's like, because it's getting worse, which is weird since he's been out here for like 25 years. Acting lassen. Talk about growing up in Boston. What was your family like?
My dad was a civil engineer working in the city, and my mom had 4 kids in 6 years, so she was with her hands full. I have 3 sisters. We just grew up in a small town, and didn't get into acting until I saw my sister in a play, and I was like, oh, I can do that.
Oh, I can do that.
Yeah.
That's funny. What was your dad like? Did you see him much, or was he working all the time?
I mean, he worked 9 to 5 in the city, and it was a commute, but he was a Boy Scout leader, and he made me join the Boy Scouts, which was fun at first.
You love the Boy Scouts. I can already tell you just loved it.
I mean, my dad was just really obsessed with it, and you know, was constantly trying to get me to learn how to read maps and tie knots. And it was fun at first, but the older I got, the less fun it was, and the more aware I was of how dorky it was. So when I got to high school, freshman year of high school, I said, Dad, I don't want to do this anymore. And he was not happy with me. But, and that started our rift. No.
there's the chasm was created.
But no, we had a good relationship. Yeah, we would go on family trips. I never flew in a plane until I was 23 because the family would go camping. So as a family, we spent a lot of time together. It was a lot. There was a lot of screaming.
I hate camping. The camping, like everyone's like, I would rather stay in a 4-star hotel. Even as a kid, we were the same. I was like,
Where would you guys go? Up to New Hampshire.
We would go to the
there you go.
Lake Winnipesaukee.
New Hampshire.
Yeah, we would go up to Center Ossipee, which was...
Sure, Lake Ossipee.
Yeah, Lake Ossipee. That's where we would go. Someplace called Terrace Pines. That sounds
horrific.
Every summer.
And that sounds absolutely horrible.
It was great. I loved it. I actually loved it.
It's fun.
We would drive up Mount Washington.
Sure.
Yeah.
It's like Mosquito Central.
It is.
I can't take them. I can't take mosquitoes. I need to live in California where it's dry.
Could you just, like, were you just ready to go, leave that small town and...
Yeah.
Yeah. Where did you go to
first? I grew up in Hooksett, New Hampshire, this little small town. There was a drive-in theater that we all rode our bikes into at night. And we were, you know, it was like really small town, Little League, probably the same as you.
Mm-hmm.
Like everyone goes, sure. You know, what was your childhood? It was like kind of idyllic childhood. Yeah. And I wonder now, because I'm raising my kids as like Valley Girls.
It's crazy.
In Studio City. And none of us grew up here.
No.
And our kids
Where's your
are
wife
like,
from?
She's from Jersey, but a small town in Jersey. Same kind of thing.
Funny. Same with my wife. Yeah. Small town, Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And now we're out here, and my wife's totally like a, you know, L.A. woman. And
yeah,
because
it's foreign,
kids.
Right? I mean, it seems like suburbia, right? This area. And we lived in the Valley for the last 16 years. We just moved to the West Side. They have a seemingly normal childhood. I mean, cool stuff like Boney Island is here. And
Tom's wearing a t-shirt that says Boney Island. I don't know what Boney Island
is. It's right here.
Are my
every
kids
Halloween.
Too young?
No, they're perfect age now.
What is Boney Island?
You have to go to Boney Island this year. So the week before
Halloween.
This episode
sounds
like brought to you
it
by.
It sounds like a softcore porn. There's like Boney Island we're going to.
No, that's Boner Island. It's different.
Yeah, totally different. Also in the valley, though.
Yeah, it's more towards Chatsworth.
You want me to take my two little girls to Boner Island? I'm not.
There's a guy, I think he's a director for The Simpsons, and his house, he has a giant tree house. The whole house and yard gets, they have all these like animatronic skeletons. It's beyond whatever I'm saying right now sounds horrible.
It must be cool.
What it is.
Because the guy sells t-shirts from his house.
Andrea has one of these shirts. She wears it in the pilot.
And he lives right around here.
It's right here. It's right off of Coldwater.
I've gone to some crazy homes of like prop designers who throw those crazy Halloween parties where you walk in, you're like, this is like a movie set.
This is it. This is what you're going to see. You're going to just see thousands of people are parked on this little street in this neighborhood. And there's lights and music and a show. And everyone goes. And it's free. You just make a donation. And there's shirts and there's goodies. It's the best. It's Halloween for me and my family. Like, that's Halloween. Halloween
without
starts.
Without Boney Island, it's just not Halloween.
It's just not Halloween.
I'll have to get the... Well, it is kind of funny living in L.A. because, like, I just bought tickets for my friends are throwing a charity concert in their backyard.
Awesome.
In Hancock Park. And it's like the lineup is stupid.
I'm sure it is.
Like, you're like, those... I saw that dude.
Yeah. Oh, Duff McKagan's playing. And, you know...
It's actually Billy Bragg, the English Beats. Patton Oswalt's doing a set.
It's someone's house?
It's in someone's backyard in
I don't know
Hancock
those kind
Park.
Of people.
You know it's a charity people. Event for musical instruments for kids, Muzak.
Do you think they'll say anything negative about Trump? Because I don't.
I doubt it.
Actually,
you're in L.A.,
Tom. You know what they're doing?
Billy Bragg.
One of the events is, I forget who it is, but somebody famous is reading, they do celebrity autobiographies, and they're reading Trump's live. You know, they do it in some crazy voice or something. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pretty funny.
I'm sure it'll be very, very pro-Trump. I'm sure it'll be
for
it. Mm-hmm. But it's such a different lifestyle to come out here because, I was the same. I mean, it's so funny because you said, like, two words about your dad the same way I would talk about, my dad, I guess he was there. But he wasn't. Like, we are totally involved in our kids' lives. But my dad went to work 60 hours a week. I'd see him. He'd come home and hit me some ground balls at the end of the day. And I'd be like, hey, Dad, what's happening? He'd grab a Schlitz and go inside.
Oh, yeah.
And that was our relationship. He never showed me how to shave. He never gave me a facts of life speech. That was their generation. And I'm one of six kids.
Wow.
So I feel like, were you close with your dad? Or were you, like, I was closer with my mother.
So me too. I feel like my mom raised me mostly because my mom was a communicator. My dad was not. So, you know, everything that I remember about, you know, my mom's alive, my dad's not. But my mom, she would tell me, like, you know, be nice to other people. That's kind of like the motto, you know? Just be good to other people. She raised me right. She raised me to be polite. He's a good guy. He just, he didn't think to teach me stuff that was, like, emotional, you know? He would just, you know, show me, like, you know, this is how you fish. This is how you do this. But without really teaching me. Just kind of, it was more kind of like watch.
Step A.
Yeah, hold the flashlight. Hold it where I'm working. Maybe you'll get something out of this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Did you have to hold the flashlight while your dad fixed the car?
Of course. And then he never let me use anything.
That's my dad, too.
Yeah. I fought for a gun when I was a kid. I wanted a rifle so bad.
You wanted a rifle? Did
like
you get
12
one?
Years old. He finally relented. He got me a .22 rifle. Mm-hmm. A little .22 caliber. He said, you can't use it until I take you out and show you properly on a weekend. I'll take you out and I'll show you how to use it.
Where did you go? To the woods and just
Nowhere.
Shoot at some targets?
The rifle was never fired. In my entire life, that .22 rifle was never fired. He got me a rifle and then we never went and shot ever. Once, and he was smart because after a few months I kind of forgot about it and I moved on and I was like, whatever, the rifle. But that's who he was. We didn't go to baseball games together. We just kind of, we talk in the backyard a little bit, but yeah, we weren't close.
Did you play sports?
Yeah, I played sports all through, and then I played college soccer. Did you play sports or were you?
I'm not very coordinated, but I played like soccer all the way through. Basically, my mom wouldn't let me play. I wanted to play tackle football. She wouldn't let me. So
nowadays I would not, but back then maybe your mother was a genius.
Right. Totally. Yeah. No, she was like, no way. I'm not going to let my kid get out there and get his bones.
With
broken.
Your height, you would have been a really good,
but
like,
I was always
wide
small.
Receiver.
I wasn't tall till much later.
Oh, really?
So 6 years old, I wanted to play peewee. So all my friends were going to play peewee football. And she said no. Soccer, no one really knew what soccer was at that point.
Yeah, I remember that.
So me and the other kids whose moms wouldn't let them play football were in this like auditorium, and some guy was teaching us soccer, and the first thing he said was, okay guys, you can't touch the ball with your hands. And everyone went, ah! How?
Yeah. There was like 50 goalies. Everyone's like, I'll be goalie.
And then, you know, 1 year basketball, 1 year baseball. I didn't like it. I didn't like the competition.
Well, you didn't like Boy Scouts. You didn't like the sport. Yeah, sometimes
I love sports, though. I love watching sports. I'm a fan. I love playing them. I love pickup. Like, as I got bigger, I would play pickup sports and stuff. We had a basketball court. My dad put up a basketball hoop in our driveway. We would shoot hoops and stuff like that. He was tall. I mean, he was 6'1". No, he showed me how to shoot a free throw from between my knees. And then when I did that at school, people were like, what the hell are you doing? You know, it was like, oh no, my dad taught me the wrong thing.
But he actually taught you the right thing.
He did.
Because Rick Barry, they say it's way more accurate to go that way, but it looks
terrible.
Such a pussy, so the pros won't do it. They tried to get Shaquille O'Neal to do it, and he was like, not a chance, man. I'd rather have a 0% shooting than actually try to get the ball in the rim, yeah.
Exactly. I mean, we would play catch, and if the ball went over my head and I had to run into the woods to grab it, he would always say, all the way from there, you know? And now I do that to my son. I was like, oh my God.
Well, that's funny, because sometimes I catch myself and I go, God damn, I sound just like my father. Yeah. Even though I fought it, kicking and screaming, like, I'm not gonna be like you, old man. I remember it's like we had some brawls, not like punching fights, but we had some arguments. Shouting matches.
Was your dad just like stubborn?
Oh my God. Yeah. Like Archie Bunker, very Archie Bunkerish. Grew up in Boston. Like in Boston. He worked in a butcher shop.
Say no more.
Yeah, he grew up in Boston.
Yeah, you don't express yourself.
I had four sisters. Like, he would rant and rave about different races, and sure enough, whoever he ranted about, my sister would bring home a guy, like, carbon copy of what he had just said. God damn it, don't you data. And sure enough, she'd be like, hey, meet my friend, Emilio. And you'd be like, what the fuck? And, like, my father lost his shit. Yeah. That's hilarious. Four sisters, and they just lost their minds.
That's so funny. I had three sisters. I have three sisters. They didn't bring guys. The one sister
Are you
would
all
date.
Good kids?
We're all good kids. We're all They're all married.
Really?
Kids. Everyone's
maybe your parents
totally
are fantastic.
Stable.
No drama.
I mean, there wasn't much. No, we played it safe. My dad was kind of the guy who got angry over how you took care of your things. And I realize I'm that way now. If you don't put things away after you use them, you know, or packing the back of the car would always be a nightmare situation, you know, because he was so meticulous about it. And I noticed that I'm that way now. And my wife is always quick to point out, she's like, dude, you're doing that thing that you hated about your father. And my son said to me, Dad, you're being crazy right now. I said, you're right. I don't like that about myself.
Packing the trunk?
About just anything where I get tense about, like, yeah, about getting traveling and going somewhere and packing your suitcase or packing your stuff. I get weird about it.
I do. I think I do too. Yeah.
Yeah. And I'm like, they'll go to put stuff in the back of the car. And I'm like, no, don't even put it in. Let me do it. You know? And
that's my father too.
Right. Exactly. So my son was like, Dad, you're getting crazy. And I said, you're right. Well, let's have a safe word. When I start acting crazy, we should have a safe word. And he was like, ugh, that sounds ridiculous, Dad. And I said, no. The word will be snuffleupagus. And he was like, ugh, God, you're such a nerd. Sure enough, like at least a dozen times since we said that, my son has had to turn me and go, Dad, snuffleupagus, all right?
That's funny.
Yeah.
I'm sure that's going to make it into next season of I'm Sorry.
We'll see.
That feels like an episode right there.
Do you take them camping?
We've camped in the backyard. We've set up the tent in the backyard many times.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
That's the kind of camping. I'll set up a tent and go in the backyard. As long as I can come inside, watch Game of Thrones.
Use the bathroom.
Like, yeah. I need a bathroom and I need a shower.
I feel like I'm always looking for the campground that were like in New Hampshire where there were like tall trees and there was a lake you could swim and fish in and stuff. I feel like here it's like you either got El Capitan, you know, which
Never
is the
been.
Beach. Yeah, I haven't been either, but I've seen it. It looks nice, but it's glamping.
I've seen some great photos. It looks beautiful.
Or you're going up into the mountains like Mammoth or Arid or something like that, and you have to prepare yourself for bear attacks. And I'm like, I think I'll just pass on the camping where the bears are.
There's no middle ground.
I'm not down with that.
I guess not. Yeah, I mean, it is also like, we live in the desert.
We do. We live in the desert, and I've only got a tent. I'm not going to go buy an RV or rent an RV. I'm just not going to do it. I'm a tent camper, you know? Well, I can't believe I just said that.
Damn it. I'm a tent
camper. That's the opening line of the intro.
You got a tent camper.
I'm a tent camper.
Damn it.
I'm a tent camper.
That sounds so weird.
My friends used to give me so much grief. I didn't even like, even as a kid skiing, I was like, it's going to be really cold on Cannon Mountain. I just, Cannon Mountain?
I remember, I'm like Cannon Mountain.
I can't
just
deal
icy.
With it. It's just icy and cold and shitty.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty back there, but I'm like, yeah, I can't.
Did you ever do the Alpine slide at Attitash?
Yeah, at Attitash. That's so funny.
Yeah. The Aquabogin.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I loved growing up there. It was a great place to grow up. It was really fun and charming and, you know, that little league vibe. But yeah, as soon as I get old enough, I was like, I am out of here.
Mm-hmm. Me too.
You went to Syracuse. Why Syracuse?
Because it was 6 hours away. Which was close enough, but far enough.
I went to Boston University, which was like a couple hours. Yeah,
it's a great school.
Yeah, just enough away. But
I just didn't want to go to Boston because everyone I knew was going to Boston. I needed to get away. I also really loved the campus at Syracuse.
I know so many people from Syracuse. Reed Scott from My Boys did. Jay Harrington, Tay Diggs. They were all. It's like a huge theater program there. Right?
Yeah. I was there with Jay and Tay, both good guys. Yeah, it was a good program, too. I didn't go there for acting. I went there for communications and got in and then transferred.
Their communications school is supposed to be really good.
It's really good, but I just got there and realized that I had been fooling myself. I just picked a $5 word. Communications sounded good, but I always wanted to be an actor.
Did you do play? Yeah, you always did, right?
I did.
Yeah. I kind of did, too. What was funny is I didn't realize it could be a job. Like, growing up, that was the one thing I think
my kids
are going to grow up thinking a different...
Totally.
Like in New Hampshire, I saw TV shows and I just thought that was magical people who did this crazy thing.
You wanted to do it, but who does that?
Who does that? Nobody.
Just thought the same thing.
Yeah, from there. And so it wasn't until I came to California. I was Navy. I was ROTC in college and I went in the Navy after college.
Oh, wow.
So I was like a Navy lieutenant.
That's how you wound up here?
That's how I wound up in San Diego. And then I got out of that, got a bartending job and fell into acting.
No way. Yeah. Did you do any acting at BU?
No, not really. No, I have no skills whatsoever. I think that's pretty obvious, Tom.
No, it's not. You're great.
Hanging on by a thread.
No.
I'm going to go with Jamie on this one.
Andy knows. The greatest, my only acting job is acting like an actor occasionally. So when you transferred over, was there like, what did your father say? Was he like, seriously, this is what you're going to
do? Okay, so that's what I was really worried about, was that they were just going to be like, nope, no way, that's crazy. Because they're paying, of course.
And they were like, no more checks, brother.
Right. And I was... Actually, my freshman year, I got some C's, and they were like, you can't stay in college if you get C's. So I like brought my grades up. And I always had good grades all through my life. I was a good student. I just got to college, and there was no one there to make sure that I did my homework. So
were you out partying and tearing it up, or were you?
More sleeping in and missing class than like actually doing any kind of partying. I was just like, wow, there's no one here to wake me up. I can miss this class. No one's calling me to say
you
got to go
late, though, if you weren't out partying?
Because I was a nerd.
Nobody was making me go to bed. Yeah. Were you a nerd? I mean, were you a nerd? Did you play like Dungeons and Dragons? And
no, I would play like fantasy football or like,
you're like a sports nerd.
Yeah, sports nerd or like or we would just go and play basketball in the gym because one of us had a security guard there. Yeah, you had the key and you just stay there.
I was the opposite, man. I got to college and I was like, I drank. We just partied.
Well, remember, he was already in love with his future wife at this point.
That's true. So. He was waiting.
He didn't need to go out and corral.
By the time I got to my junior college, that's when I met the kids that I started partying with. But that was later. By that point, I was already an actor.
You're in the actor, yeah, because the theater program's heavily into drinking. What did your father say when you came home and you said, listen, I know I got C's, but here's something better.
The funniest part about that was that in the summers, I was doing summer theater with this group of guys that did like a Renaissance fair in Rhode Island. And...
You are such all a dork.
Right. Just that sentence that was it. Is just precious.
I was working at medieval times.
That's right.
I was the horse wrangler. Mm-hmm.
Basically, I would have been happy. In my heart, I was like, I will be happy if I did this for the rest of my life. Just acting with these Renaissance guys. I would be, if this is what the bottom is, I'm happy. So I prepared to transfer into the drama department. I figured out all the boxes that needed to be checked. I wanted all the answers to my parents' questions ready before I even told them. I told them that I wanted to do it. I was obviously very passionate. And then they said, well, we just want you to be happy. And my mom said, but just to as backup, we just want to make sure that the Renaissance Fair guys think it's a good idea. And so
that's the craziest.
My life, my career hung
that's
in the balance.
That's the bar
of what the
that
Renaissance
they set?
And did she sit down and interview with each of them separately?
Yeah, she asked them and they said, we think he'll be good. We think he'll be a good actor.
Why? Because they were in the theater program at the
time?
Yeah,
because they were so smart.
They were so smart. They were so knowledgeable. They Alexander Technique. Yeah. They knew some...
They were the smartest. They were the big stars that we knew.
They were the big Renaissance guys in Rhode Island.
What was theater at a Renaissance festival like?
Well, these guys they would write these epic stories each summer, and we'd come, and it always ended in a life-size chess match.
Always.
Like, so the whole day would be like 6 hours long, and there'd be all these little like sketches, and then the thing would just end at a stupid
checkmate,
chess match.
Sir.
Yeah. Yeah.
Now let's get some grog.
Pawn to queen, you know, and like they would move and there'd be little bits. It was so bad, but it was fun.
It breaks into like the seventh sign with Max von Sydow, where he plays chess with death, and it just everything breaks down to that.
That's a reference I don't get.
Really? Yeah. Really? Not you either?
I know who Max von Sydow is.
I know.
It's a really famous movie, black and white. Max von Sydow plays chess with death on a beach.
Oh, no, of course. I know the movie. It's
Andy.
It's me. I'm not saying you guys are all... No, I can't.
But my favorite Max von Sydow role was in Strange Brew.
No, that's a good one. My favorite one's in The 3 Days of the Condor.
Oh, yeah.
He plays the hitman who comes in.
That I...
Move away from the window, please. Yeah. Max von Sydow's going to be on this next week. So your parents were cool. You go on. They must nowadays. They must be like, yeah, we kind of guided him into acting.
Yeah, I think that they were just happy that I was staying in school, you know, and pursuing something. And I think maybe their fear was that they were going to have to keep supporting me. I guess that would be my fear if my kid wanted to be an actor. I'd be like, how long am I going to be? Yeah,
dad said that. I got out of the Navy and I went to go to acting, and he's like, all right, we'll open the back bedroom up for you. And I was like, Dad, I'd kill myself before I came home and lived under your roof again. Not a chance. Yeah. That's how they thought, though.
Also, my mom always says, well, we knew that you were going to do whatever you wanted anyway. So maybe that's kind of a
backhanded insult / compliment. You were always like that, Tom. You did whatever you damn well pleased.
Well, aren't all kids like that, though? I mean, yes. Isn't that the whole thing?
My four-year-old's like that.
Yeah.
That's what I was telling you. So the story goes, last night we have to... We're horrible parents. Their school application for next year's kindergarten class, next September 2018, is apparently due by the end of this August 2017.
That's crazy.
Crazy, right? So they need a photo. So we were trying to shoot a photo of her. And, you know, she won't take a photo. She won't take a photo. I'm getting to the point where I'm like, just sit there. I'll kill you if you don't let me take this picture. Not conducive to great photos. So we bribed her with ice cream. We were like, we'll take you for ice cream. And so finally she begrudgingly takes off. Miserable. None of them are usable. They're going to be horrible photos. But it's like we're looking for the perfect picture as opposed to just, who cares, man? It's like they're going to go, oh, she doesn't photograph that well. You know what?
This is not good lighting.
This is not good. In L.A., they might. That's what I think we think. She's like, oh, they go, this kid's never going to work. It's kindergarten, but that's how we thought.
It's true, but the pressure's on. Look, you're applying a year early. I mean, I remember that.
You know, the application process is like... What are their strengths and weaknesses? She's four. She won't do one thing we ask her to do. That's a weakness.
It's so upsetting. Are you guys looking at private or public or both?
Both. We don't know what we're going to do. We have a pretty good public school right here that we could go to, but we also have, there's a Catholic school we like. There's a couple of private schools that we like. And so we're going to tour them all and go, but you have to fill out the applications and send in the $100 deposit and answer all the questions.
And then they go,
what makes your kid special? Nothing. She's four, dude.
We have no idea.
I don't know what's going to happen.
She may have nothing special.
She's a redhead, so I'm pretty sure she's going to set something on fire in the next 10 years. I don't know what, but she's crazy.
So maybe that's it? So red hair is arson? Yeah.
Yeah, redhead actually goes to arson. So we bribed her with ice cream. So we shot a bunch of pictures, and then we took them up to Sweet Rose Creamery up here, and we had some ice cream at like 7 o'clock.
That's a good
Not spot. The greatest idea with a 4-year-old and a 2-year-old. So the 2-year-old was up all night, like all night long.
Pumped full of sugar.
Yeah. So she came into our bed, and at 1 o'clock in the morning, I'm like, and I hear these two little feet hit the ground next to our bed, boop, and then I hear them walking around the house at 1 o'clock in the morning. Our 2-year-old is wandering. I go, where's Claire? And I get up, I wander through the house, and I found her like in the living room, just leaning on a table, kind of half asleep. And I'm like, holy shit, dude, I can't. She's two. What is this when she's 14 and she just sleepwalks out of the house?
Is she in a crib or in a big girl bed?
She's in a crib, but at 1 o'clock in the morning after like, screaming five different times, we finally just taken her into our bed.
So she got out of your bed.
She got out of our bed and wandered in.
I remember when my daughter got moved to a big girl bed was because she could just climb right out of the
crib.
Yeah,
that's how it always happens.
Like, I'm washing the dishes. I put her to bed like an hour ago, and there she's standing next to me. I'm like, Houdini, how did you do that?
And she's like, ta-da!
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Yeah.
That's what happened with our other one. This one hasn't figured it out yet. Uh-huh. She hasn't, so we're kind of... But she's totally potty trained now. It's really weird, so she's a little odd.
Isn't it funny how, like, two kids from the same parents can be totally different?
It's the weirdest thing. When she was born, we were like, well, here's another carbon copy of Hannah, and night and day. They are night and day, yeah. Is it, with a boy and a girl, it's obviously going to be...
Right, but I mean, just the different personalities, and, like, you know, my daughter would go to sleep, even though she could crawl out of the crib, she also could just sleep on her own. You wouldn't have to, like, sit in there, where my son was the opposite. He would just cry until he was just exhausted and then finally fall asleep. And you had to be in the room with him. You know what I mean? They're just different. And, you know, I can see my daughter just being kind of more, she's way more relaxed and laid back, and he's got more anxiety. Like, she wants to go to college far away, be independent, get away from home. He's probably going to want to go really close by. They're just really different people. And live in the house. Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah. They're both in high school.
No, he's in seventh grade, but she's 12th grade. So she's applying to colleges this fall.
Oh, they're that far apart.
They're 4.5 years apart in age, and they're like 5 years apart in school.
Did you guys plan? Did you know two right out of the chute?
We were almost going to just have the one. And we were like, this is really great, just having one kid. So easy. We have her outnumbered.
Right.
You know.
We can take turns. One of us can nap.
So we waited and waited and waited. And finally, I think we were at the point where we were like, I love my sister. She loves her brother and sister, and we were like, it'd be really nice if Arlie, our daughter, had a sibling. Like, we love our siblings. Why would we deprive her of that? That's how you felt. Same way.
I know some solo kids, and it's fine, but it's a different thing. I think it is. It's funny because all they do is fight now.
Yeah.
The age gap of yours is a little better because the older one's totally in charge.
Yeah, but they fight, and they fight because of that, because he resents that she is somewhat in charge. And his whole thing is like, you're not my boss. You're not another parent. Stop telling me what to do, you know? So he's constantly, and he's super sarcastic, and he's constantly like, he never says anything nice about her, but he loves her and he's going to miss her. And I've noticed that he's really aware that she's leaving this year. And he's trying so hard to spend a lot of time with her, but at the same time, not let her know that he likes her.
Is he already measuring her room? Is he going to take her room?
He's got the bigger room.
Oh, he does have the bigger room. That's funny. I remember when my older sister went to college, and I was like, yeah, I'll see you later. And then I was like, I'm just looking at the room like, that room's mine.
I'm all over that room.
Measuring.
What was it like when you had the first one? Did you have the first one in New York?
Yeah, we were living in New York.
Where were you in your career? Had you already done that thing you do?
Had done that thing you do, a few movies. It was, the movies that I was doing weren't making money at the box office, and it was like a moment where I was like, what's next, you know? Like, I was on the short list for a lot of movies, and then it's like, I'm not on the short list anymore. So it was kind of like in that moment where I was about to start doing TV, and to be completely honest about it, I think we were freaking out about money, and here comes a kid. I was gonna hold out and just keep trying to do movies. And then the kid came along, and that's actually when I took my first TV gig.
We all say the same story.
Yeah.
I was living in a rent-controlled apartment for $700 a month. I had done My Boys, and I had a ton of money, and I didn't give a shit, and people would call me and go, nah, I'm good, man. Don't worry about it. And I'm like, nah. And now, with two kids, people call me and go, yeah. Yep. What does that pay real quick?
100%.
Yeah, yes. It's like changed everything. And a lot of my friends who are really successful had kids early in their career, mm-hmm. and stopped saying no. And they have amazing careers, and they turned out way better for them because they were way more motivated than me. I would go to Vegas for a week and not give a shit and not care. And now I'm like, well, I got to make money.
That's where I'm at. And I even got rid of the representation that was telling me to hold out and pass on all this work. And I was watching all this good work go by, and I was like, I changed it up. I got a new manager, a new agent, and I started just working. And
same thing.
And made me happier.
I still have panic attacks about a couple of the jobs I said no to. The guy was like, no, the deal's terrible, man. Let's hold out. Because they have a whole stable of characters, and they know if four or five of those guys book the major CBS four-camera sitcom, then the agency's fine. They're not looking for like little cool jobs that help you at all. It's really a, you have to eventually take it into your own hands and go, look, dude, you don't know what I'm doing here.
I'm Sorry is a perfect example of that because I told my team I'm doing this show. And it's on a smaller network. They didn't have the big money that my reps were looking for. And I said, I don't care. I'm doing the show. And I told Andrea, I said, I'm doing the show. And negotiate. They were kind of like holding out for certain things, like, you know, like, you know, like being being able to be released to do other things. Right. You know, we were just holding out for some of that language. But I kept telling Andrea, it's good. It's going to be okay. You know, and all of a sudden she emailed me and said, sorry, this isn't going to work out. And I was like, no. I called her. I said, what are you talking about? She goes, oh yeah, your team passed. And I was like, no. I called the guy. I'm like, what did you do? You passed? Why? I told you no matter what, just where I'm doing this job. And he was like, oh, there was a deadline. I'm like, what deadline? So fired that guy. Told Andrea, nope, doing the show. And I mean, look at this is like one of my favorite things I've ever been involved
it's
with.
It's so funny. The show is so, and honestly, you're going to be doing it for a while.
It's
man.
Successful.
Yeah.
How about that? You know?
Well, it's funny. You talk about the movies thing, and I think nowadays it's like, there's nothing better than TV. The shows that I see on TV, on Netflix or whatever, or all these different shows are so good compared to movies are like only comic book movies and...
That's right.
Nobody goes out to movies anymore.
No, it's just horror movies and comic book movies are the ones who make money. And I think that the movies that we grew up going to see that were like the $30 million movies, that the broadcast news and the, you know, like,
right.
You know, those movies that kind of fill that void, that TV's filling that void.
They're just making them. I saw the one with De Niro and... Michelle Pfeiffer as Bernie Madoff on HBO, which is a fantastic film. But years ago, that would have gone straight to the movies.
Sure.
And now it's on HBO, and it's like, it's great. Yeah.
There's almost too many. I mean, there are too many series, good series out there.
I know.
And I'll never watch
any of them. I know. You can't see them all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's too much to ask. It's like friends are just telling me, like, read this stack of books when you have time.
I got a lot of time. I got two kids. It's all going
to
work out.
Yeah, because I'll be able to stay up.
Well,
no problem.
It's so funny. Everyone was like, it was such a bad thing to do TV. And then you saw Kiefer Sutherland make $1 million per week shooting 24. And you're like, there's no film that was going to pay him $24 million.
No.
So the whole business is insane. And now you can't even, as a new actor, get commercials because all the movie stars are...
Yeah, they're all doing that. Remember when movie stars wouldn't do commercials?
They do one in Japan for like $1 million, and now it's like, if you don't have an ad campaign running, you're not even a movie star anymore.
Right.
Yeah, no, the whole system's so changed.
My buddy is Josh Lucas. He's the voice of
Home Depot.
And I'm like...
Killing it!
Making any money doing that?
Killing it! Doesn't even need to do any movies anymore. He's like, nah, dude, I'll just go in and record every now and then. I hear his voice every day, and I go, because I do a lot of voiceover stuff too, and I'm like, God damn, Josh Lucas.
Yeah.
Son of a bitch.
Let's do carpet. Let's do paint. Let's do this.
You earned it. That's so good. It's funny. Yeah. All those campaigns are great. I mean,
let's
John Hamm's
do
got
anything I want to buy at the store. Let's do all the kids.
They're all
tuitions.
Every time I hear one, it's Jeff Bridges doing Hyundai or some. It's all giant stars doing voiceovers. Why wouldn't you?
What do you do voiceovers? That's great. Did you get into that early?
No, late. I fell into it. I did ended up doing some animated shows. I did Robot Chicken, and now I do a couple others and stuff. And I've had a couple campaigns on TV, but nowadays they're few and far between because they are going megastars.
Do you ever do like the animated shows?
Yeah, I've done a few here and there.
That's great.
Yeah, that's the best. I wish I'd have discovered that earlier. That's the best job on earth, man.
Yeah.
Haven't you? I mean, you're so recognizable as a voice. You would think that you.
I got one gig and it was great, and it kind of lasted over a couple shows. I was the voice of Booster Gold on Justice League, and then Batman: Brave and the Bold. But you know, I'm clearly not as good as the rest of the people in that room because they're all doing multiple characters, and the director's like, Tom, you handle the one character.
it's like Hank Azaria. Like enough. I go sometimes, and they go, "Hey, can you do a couple different characters?" And you're like, "I can," but Carlos Alas Rocky would. Do 12 in about 30 seconds, that would destroy.
Yeah,
it's just not my greatest skill. I usually sound like myself.
Exactly.
It's
same
the
here.
Only skill I have.
No, in fact, that's my challenge is to sound like myself consistently.
Well, it's funny because every time people see me on TV, they go, you're just being yourself. I go, that's the job. Can you be yourself saying somebody else's words when they yell action? Can you do that?
That's
I
what
don't
we all
know.
Are. We're all some version of ourselves.
Always.
The only real...
I love when like, people are like, my character actor. You're not, dude. You're not a fireman. You're you as a fireman. I know.
Yeah.
It's hard.
Who's the only like character actor out there?
Stephen Lang. Do you know who he is?
No.
He's Ike Clanton from Tombstone. He's played every Civil War general. We had Stephen Tobolowsky on, although he's kind of always himself. Do you know who he is?
No.
Needle-nosed Ned Ryerson from Groundhog Day.
Oh, yeah.
He's
on Silicon Valley.
Yeah.
He also has a new series coming out. I just saw him on a trailer.
One Day at a Time he's on.
No, not yet another one where he plays a Hollywood agent.
A rapper.
yeah, he was on Californication.
He's fantastic. Yeah. Groundhog Day is one of my favorite movies of
Xander
all time.
Xander Berkeley.
I was going to say Daniel Day-Lewis. Daniel Day-Lewis will come on and disappear into a role.
Gone.
You know.
I can't believe he's like, I'll watch a movie just because he's in it.
Yeah. He's not hanging it up. He'll be back.
Yeah, he's waiting for the right role. Spielberg will offer him some. But you see people like even De Niro, you know. Yeah, he plays different parts, but he's always De Niro.
Bale, I think.
Bale disappears.
Yeah.
He's pretty good.
That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's great.
He's going to an actor review show. And then it got real quiet all of a sudden. You feel it?
I did.
So you're working, you have kids, and you start to do, you know, you're basically a family. What was it like when did you have to travel a lot for work? And was your wife like, yeah, I got it, don't worry about it? Or was she like, where are you going?
No. I mean, she got used to me going away for work before kids, you know, where I would go to Europe to do stuff or just travel, just Canada, wherever, just far from home. So we got used to that, and we always had that rule of like never for more than 3 weeks. We'll always try to see each other every 3 weeks at the most. It was hard when I went to Bulgaria for a movie and I couldn't really travel back. And this is when we had kids that I did that. So I did watch, you know, like my daughter's school went to sixth grade. So they had like a graduation ceremony when they finished sixth grade. And I watched that on the iPhone, you know, which is great because we have that now. We have FaceTime, we have Skype. So that helps. It does feel weird though sometimes. I don't know if you've ever seen that show Black Mirror.
It's great.
I always feel like I'm some dad app, you know, that is not self-aware. You know what I mean? Like that I'm just some dad on a phone.
Oh, hey.
Yeah. Who thinks he's real. But then I find
every
out
time
at
I
the
FaceTime,
end of the episode.
My kids are so young that they don't get it yet. And they'll be like, oh, hey, Dad. Oh, hey. And then they'll turn around and go back to what they're playing with. And my wife's like, yeah, they just finished dinner. It's not a great time.
And that just devolves into making faces at each other on
Skype. Yeah.
It still does that. Even at 12 and 17, it's just making faces.
I watched my second one be born on FaceTime.
Shut up.
From an airport in Omaha.
What?
I took a corporate stand-up gig. It was like a month early.
Oh,
and
this
I went,
is the ultimate version of the story.
I left town for 24 hours, and sure enough, she gave birth in those 24 hours. She went that next morning.
Oh my God.
She left like 50 messages, and the hotel wouldn't let her phone calls through. And when I was boarding my plane, and I was holding the phone, and everyone in the line thought I was being a dick, and I was like, my kid's being born!
Oh my God.
And so there's a photo of me. You can see my little square face up in the corner, and then you see my wife's legs, and then this baby with the cord being held up. The doctor held it up to the camera. Have you ever seen that, Andy?
No.
I'll have to post it with this.
No,
thing.
I don't think you should.
It's insane. No,
that's
amazing. I cropped my wife's private parts out.
Okay.
But
it sucks, but it's great that with technology you get to see it.
I watched it. I was like, And then later she told me, she goes, it's kind of good that you missed it because I
pooped all over the place.
Apparently you're familiar with that.
You did the international signal for pooped all over the place.
Like, I need more reasons to not have children.
Which she didn't do on the first one. This is such a dude thing. What were the births like when you went? Did you watch? Did you cut the cord? Were you flipped out?
We were flipped out. My daughter was 5 weeks early, and she was breached, so it was an emergency C-section, and she was 5 pounds, so she was a preemie technically, and she was small. She was the biggest preemie in the NICU, but she was early. So then when you have the first kid C-section, they recommend the second kid be C-section as well, so not to traumatize that area. They put a door in. Exactly. And a scheduled C-section is very civilized. You're going to have the kid on this day at this time. It was great. My son's C-section was on the day of Game 7 of the ALCS Sox versus Yankees in 2004. And there was I was shooting down in San Diego.
What?
I think the choice was easy for you, right?
I was shooting down in San Diego, but it was in the morning and the game was at night. So I wasn't going to like miss the game because of my stupid son's birth.
That kid's an idiot. No. Just hold on, baby. So the game's on.
So you did make the right choice.
I made the right choice. So what happened was...
Dude!
We all know that they were down 3-0 to the Yankees.
We don't. We do. But everybody's listening. It's a 2004.
Most people know this. The Yankees were up
3-0.
The Yankees up 3-0. I was going back and forth between L.A. and San Diego, and I was listening all my drives down there, and one of those games was rained out. So, and there was a chance, so they pushed it, and I was like, well, if it goes to Game 7 now, Game 7 will happen on October 20th, the day that my son's going to be born. And in my mind, I'm like, that's good luck. He's the birth of the Bambino. He's going to break the curse of the Bambino. And that morning, my wife's getting prepped, and they're getting ready to take the baby out. And we're talking about this with the doctors, and my wife's like, yo, idiots, down here. There's something a little more pressing happening down here. The doctor's like, who's pitching tonight? I'm like, Pedro's pitching. You know, so it was a historic day, you know?
Well, it is to a point where you're like, oh, look, we have a beautiful baby. I have to leave.
No, the greatest thing in the world was watching that game with my son in my arms, my brand.
Oh, in the hospital, just in the hospital room, watching the game. That's funny. You were like, baby, honestly, it's bad luck if I don't go to the bar I normally go to. Because we watch the Sonny's. Sonny McClain's. Yeah. Jay Harrington was there. We were all there.
God, it's amazing.
That was maybe the best and worst place to be, right?
Both.
Yeah.
But you had your seat. And so there was a line around the block because we were locals. We walked right past the line, walked in, and every game I watched in the same seat. And we knew nobody fucking changed seats. Like, it was that crazy. And then we drank our asses and then wandered around the streets just stumbled.
Well, the streets, I lived in Santa Monica at the time, and I got caught up in the streets outside of Sonny's after the game was won. It was insane.
We were like, it was like Walking Dead because people were like, what just happened? Did we just win the World Series?
What was the big play in game 4 that turned the tide? Do you remember?
Well, there was a home.
Was it Ortiz?
Ortiz hit a home run in like the bottom of the ninth to tie it, and then didn't it go to two of them went to extra innings, and he hit game winning home runs.
So there's the artistic director for Center Theater Group here, you know, the taper.
Yeah.
And his name is Michael Ritchie, and he's from Mass, and he's a huge Boston fan. So his story was he was somewhere on location, and he ran back to his hotel room from whatever he was doing to watch the game, and he was getting changed maybe to go out to another thing, and he wound up watching that turning point moment with shirt on, pants off, and stood there in front of the TV and watched them win that game and decided that he had to watch the rest of the games.
Ship his shirts off.
No matter what.
Same socks, same underwear. Like, don't change a thing. Yeah. You're moving.
So he watched the rest of the series with no pants on.
Oh, God.
And it worked.
I had alcohol poisoning, I think, after that week of just like, we drank every night.
I went to the series that year. I went to the series every year.
You went to the actual game in Fenway?
Yeah.
Are you going to go this year to the World Series?
I don't.
So you went last year. You went to one of the greatest World Series of all time last year.
Yeah. No, I mean, I've gone every time Boston's been.
What was the ticket to
I
get
can't
in?
Remember. It was like $1,200.
Yeah, something insane.
Like
right?
I was sitting with the Cardinals' wives.
Wow.
I was at BU the year
86 when it went through Buckner's legs. My dorm, Miles Standish dorm, which was on Kenmore Square.
Oh, wow.
Oh, Kenmore erupted.
Kenmore erupted.
Oh, you were at BU?
I was watching it at T's Pub down on Comet.
Oh,
I was watching Game 7, and I was like...
When did you graduate BU?
87.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm 100 years old.
That makes me 120.
Yeah, I survived this long. It's crazy.
You both look fantastic. Thank you, honey.
I don't care as much about the sports anymore. Like, here's the other thing. Once the kids came along.
Because your kids are at that age where you can't
care
about
sports. Did you watch the game last night? I have two kids. You think I can sit and watch a five-hour Red Sox-Yankee game?
You can't.
I can barely watch the highlights on SportsCenter.
I stopped doing fantasy football, which I'm obsessed with, during those years that my kids were and then got back into it at a certain point. And like... And I gave it up.
Caring father. You're such a good guy.
I gave it up when I was in one league, and I was like, this is too much. Yeah, I'm in six leagues.
Are you really?
So stupid.
I don't do them. I've never done them once.
Ugh.
I
have to cut back. I'm not going to do this many leagues next year.
I still watch football. Patriots are going to go undefeated this year.
They could.
And
well, Edelman just got knocked out for the season.
Yeah, he's out for the year. But I mean, they have so many pass. I mean, you can't really replace Edelman, but they have so many pass catchers.
They'll replace him in a heartbeat. He's shown you can replace anybody. Are your kids athletic?
No. My daughter played softball for like 5 years. She enjoyed it. But at the point that it gets really competitive, she was like, I'm not into this. And my son has tried. He did like 1 year of soccer. He did one, he's like me. 1 year of baseball. He tried like.
What's his interest?
Well, now he. Well, he's an incredible artist. They both are. They're both incredible artists. She's looking at art schools. You know, he draws all the time. She's into movies and music. He's into like video games, and he's skateboarding. He just broke his wrist. We just got a cast on his wrist yesterday. He broke his wrist skateboarding. But that's pretty athletic.
Were you terrified, or were you more angry? Like, really? You just broke your wrist?
I didn't even notice it. I was with him at the skate park, and he didn't make a peep. He was with his friends, and it was just like later, like it was nothing. He was like, oh, Dad, I fell and hurt my wrist. And I was like, oh, you okay? He's like, yeah. But of course, it's one of those injuries where later he's like, Dad, my wrist really hurts and I can't move it. And it went on. That was Saturday. So Sunday night.
It's a tough kid.
Sunday night. Well, he's broken bones. He's had stitches. He's just.
Are you a skater?
No.
He's a marvel an artist? Of medicine.
I have no balance.
Is he an
artist? I draw.
You draw.
And then, okay. But he draws beyond. Like,
it's weird.
He's beyond.
It's weird where they come from, because my kids don't have any interest that I have. They're like the same. My daughter draws and she loves it. And I'm like, wow, where did you get that from? Like, none of us are artists.
Yeah, but there might be somebody that can be carried down, you know?
I guess. I
mean, I'm okay. He's beyond good.
That's awesome.
Did he break the his...
Yes, yeah, he did.
There we go.
Yep, it's the right wrist.
That's how you get into acting. All of a sudden, he breaks his wrist, no more drawing, and he's like, Dad, I became an actor. Would you want your kids to get an actor?
You know what? People ask me that. My answer to that is, if it would make them happy. Same thing my parents said to me. If it makes you happy. And then we'd have something to talk about, you know?
Have fun.
Yeah.
Have they ever been in a production that you've been in?
No.
No. You've never done like, hey, my kid can, what are we?
No, could, no. Because like, my kids aren't actors and they don't want
to
be actors.
Do you take them to the set?
They've been to so many sets. They're over it so much.
Yeah.
They're at a great
age.
I'm
over it. Even when I'm working, I'm over it.
Nothing happens.
This is what I love now about their age that they're at in the over the last few years that I can do with them that I wasn't able to do before. And my wife loves this. I'll take them. Like, I'm going to be in Toronto. I'll take them. They'll come with me for like the 10 days that I'm there. They'll come. And they have a great time because they're old enough that they can hang out in a hotel room by themselves or come to set and they know where to go to get food and I don't have to be with them. And then we get to see that city. We did that with Toronto. We did that with Atlanta. We did that with New Orleans, which was a blast. Just me and my two kids.
I look forward to that because I travel as well. And it's like, but I can't take a four-year-old.
No. This is the age like where they can carry their own suitcase. They can pack their own suitcase.
And they'll sit quietly on a plane. And
without your help.
The thing, they can, they don't need my help to take them to the bathroom or anything like that.
Well, I was referring to the packing.
Well, yeah, don't.
To call it back to that.
See?
They can pack their own suitcase.
That's why I'm here.
But I pack. No, I make them pack.
Did you have any other scary, like broken, you say he's broken everything. You take it pretty easily. Other people, like, we haven't had too many emergency room visits.
That's lucky. That's good.
Yeah.
You don't want that. Girls don't usually wind up.
My wife is so overprotective.
The girls don't usually, and I don't mean to say be sexist. They could absolutely wind up in the emergency room as often as a boy. But for some reason, we haven't had that situation. My daughter tends to stay out of trouble. He will just, like, as a kid, he would, like, run up onto the monkey bars before he knew, like, how to use them. And then he'd fall down and break his leg or break his arm.
Has he broken tons of?
Yeah. He's been in casts and slings and. You know, he's fallen and smacked his head on something and split it open, you know.
I don't think we've had a parent here who said that about their kid. The kid's constantly
people
being
lie. Here's the other thing. People
up.
Lie. And the whole thing about this was that I am so bluntly truthful. Sometimes when we go out and my wife's like, just keep your mouth shut, man. Nobody wants to hear any of your bullshit stories about the kids anymore. They're done with it. But it is a terror. Like, I still have terrible fears. Traveling, we were in the Honda Odyssey the other day. I have an Odyssey. And it's got the automatic doors. You can push a button and open it. So I reach back for my seat and I unpop both of their
car seat
belts, and then went around to the other side, the passenger side, to open the sliding door to let them both out that side. But while I was letting that one out, the 2-year-old, boop, pops the door open. The door opens on the left side. The one 6 inches away from flaming traffic going by. And I, like, dove across the inside of the Honda Odyssey and, like, grabbed her by the back of the shirt. And then I sat quietly on the curb having a panic attack that luckily my wife will never listen to.
Is there a way to lock that out?
You got a childproof locket, but that would have been the thing. It would have been like, she would have gone out, got clipped, and I would have been like, I didn't, because you wouldn't see that coming, that the kid would open the door and stumble out that side. And I was like,
I remember having my daughter in the car seat. This is before our son was born. So she was my daughter was little. She was in the car seat and we were racing to LAX to pick up my wife from the airport. And we were late. We were running behind. And traffic on the 101 was really bad. So I was like, surface streets. So I take a off ramp, and the off ramp, you know, is one of those really tight turns. And I turn the wheel. I'm going kind of fast. And I look in the rearview mirror and I watch my daughter tip over because I didn't strap this car seat in. She just goes sideways in her, strapped into her seat. And I was like, oh, sorry, baby. Pull over. She just had this look of surprise. She went tumbling to the side of the car.
So she was in the car seat, but the car seat was not in...
Not tethered. It just rolled around in the back seat while I took this tight turn.
And you're wondering why she doesn't take risks now.
Yeah. Did you tell your wife?
Oh, yeah.
I was like,
oh, baby, you should have seen her, the look on her face.
I always told her from the beginning, and now sometimes I keep things from her. Because here's the thing. If I did that and I told my wife that, every car trip for the next 5 years, she'd be like, well, did you make sure the car seat's tethered? Did you? Because you remember the last time you went, blah, blah, blah.
You do it once. Yeah, you hear about it forever.
Don't tell her this story because then it'll be, remember what happened to Tom?
Well, are you still on your watch where it's like even when he broke his wrist at the skate park,
that was my bad.
That's on your watch.
She totally complained. I heard her complaining about it to somebody else and I was like, ooh, I'm in trouble for this. I didn't realize. Like, she was like,
what was I supposed to do? He's skating in a park. How could I stop that?
He wouldn't have broken it if he was wearing his wrist guards, is what I've heard at least 10 times since this happened.
Actually, you know what? That's Andy, I kind of agree with her. Did he normally wear them?
No. This is a skate park where they require you to wear helmet, elbow, and knee pads. They don't require the wrist pads. And he was with his buddies.
And he wanted to be cool.
None of them were wearing them. But, you know, he'll wear them from now on.
Over his cast.
At least one.
Yeah. Well, he's not going to skate with the cast on.
It's so funny because sometimes when my daughter gets hurt on my wife's watch, I'm like, yeah, there you go. Now I got one on you.
Right. You do. You keep score.
I definitely keep score.
Well, my wife left a bottle of medicine with cap off on the floor and my daughter drank it. And we had to call. That was the one emergency room thing. It wasn't an emergency room. We called 911 and they sent an ambulance.
What was the medicine?
It was Motrin. It was kids' Motrin.
Sure.
And it wasn't a giant bottle of it that she just drank.
But why is it on the floor?
Well, because my wife forgot to like put the cap on and put it away. And my wife like gave it to her and then just left it. And my daughter just waddled over to it and drank
it. Here it is in case you need some more later.
And I was like, baby, she drank it. You know, like, it's gone. She drank it. She had it all over. And I was like, oh, no. And my wife's like, oh, no, you always tell me to put the caps back on things. And I never listen. You know, and it was this whole weird moment where I was like, it's okay, baby. Don't worry about it. Yes, you should put the caps back on things. But
that's the one thing.
That's usually like, peanut butter that I'm more concerned
about. If it's on my
about.
Watch, my wife will be like, just abuse me. And when it's on my wife's watch, I'll try to start abusing her. But she'll end up abusing herself so much.
Yeah.
That then I'm like, it's okay, don't worry about it. Because then she's like, I'm a terrible mother. I'm the worst mother ever. Why do I have children? I should give these kids away. I'm a horrible person. I'm like, no, you're going to be... It's okay.
But that's good that you like to guilt people into things that way.
She guilts herself, man. Sometimes, like, if she...
Do that more with the kids.
If she doesn't spend enough time with the kids, she's like, I'm a terrible mother.
I know, isn't that heartbreaking? My wife kept cutting my daughter off the other night when they were telling a story. We were at a dinner. And I gave her a little bit of a nudge, like, hey, you know, like, let her tell her story. And but my wife was excited, too. And so later on, she was like, why were you nudging me? I was like, because every time Arlie would go to tell her story, you'd cut her off. She's like, I did? And then I immediately felt bad that I was even bringing this
right.
up. And I was like, yeah, you did it like two or three times. And I saw the look on Arlie's face like, ugh, like, I just want to tell my story, but my mom keeps cutting me off. So that's why I gave you the elbow. And she's like, she started getting so upset. I'm like, no, baby, it's okay.
Sorry, I brought it up.
Yeah. And then I think I wound up in the doghouse later.
Well, they'd never forget. They're coming after you.
Okay, another example of that is my wife went away to Vegas with her friend and came home, and it was the first time my wife had gone away and had fun, and I watched the kids. And when she came home, she said, how did it go? And I said, great, no problem. She was like, really, no problem? I was like, we had a great time. And she was like, uh-huh. And she walked around the house and she just started pointing out the things that I didn't do. Things that I could have done, didn't do, blah, blah, blah. And I was like, oh, shit. Oh, I'm in the doghouse. And I realized that when she came home and asked me how it went, I was supposed to say,
oh my God, it was so difficult. I don't know how you do it. I was out of my element, over my head, blah, blah, blah. And she would have.
You know what? That might be the greatest lesson of today's podcast, because I do the same thing where I'm like, hey, I try to, even if something horrible goes wrong, like Claire almost jumped out of the Honda Odyssey into traffic. I won't tell her. I'm like, nah, it's all good. It's all good. But I should be like, oh, baby, without you, this place just falls apart. That's right. Lesson learned. But I can't give in yet. I still have that single man pride where I'm like, no way, man, you're not going to tell me.
It'll get beaten out of you.
It's close. It's really close. It's so funny, too, because my wife's like, so-and-so's fan. Look at how happy they are. My wife sometimes will say like things to me where I'm like, hey, you can't take that back, man. You can't say that, you lunatic. But she's a crazy redhead, too, so she just says crazy shit. You know, whenever we have fights, she's like, my father told me not to marry you. I should have listened. Why would I not listen? With kids, you can't help it. You have to have blowouts. I talk to other people who are like, nah, we're pretty cool about the whole thing. I go, nobody's cool. Just blowout fights.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The older you get, the more uncool you get.
Is that the way it goes?
Yeah, the more uncool you get. Yeah. And your kids are right there to point that out.
We also, like, lately my daughter's been saying, oh my God. Oh my God.
To you about stuff you do?
Well, it's because we say, oh my God. She's starting to really repeat what we say. Do you guys, one night we were fighting and the 4-year-old was like, I want you guys to stop fighting. And I was like, and then the two of us were like, I'm sorry. Oh, we're terrible parents.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's so hard to keep everything. It together. They pick up everything. It's crazy. Yeah,
they really notice when something's going on between the two of you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I'm just not that good of an actor. And really, when we're having brawls, it's really tough to get it together. What's your secret to keeping it all together? Because it is true that you've been married for a long time.
I don't know, man. I don't know it's work. It's not easy, you know.
Traveling like you do.
Yeah, and you know, when we've hit snags, when we've like gone through rough spots, you know, we'll go see a shrink, we'll go see a therapist.
Have you? Because my wife wants to, and I'm like, yeah. I've been fighting it, but honestly, lately I've been like, fine, yeah, I'll do that.
No, I'm a big proponent of it. I mean, definitely talking to somebody, having somebody who, you know, listens to this stuff. I mean, I definitely didn't know how to argue with my wife when we first started out. We basically met when we were really young, and our marriage has always been young feeling, mm-hmm. and we fight like, you know, really in an immature way. We had to learn how to kind of like, you know, I mean, my friends who get together when they're older, they're fully formed adults when they get together. And so they know how to argue and not make it a blowout fight. But that's it. And I think that to answer your question, I think that a long-term marriage works because you work at it.
We do, but I'm institutionalized in a way where it's hard for me.
True. I get it.
To kowtow and go, you're right.
Yeah. And
it's so set in my ways. I have to be better. What was it like when you went to a shrink? Were you guys like, well, she said this and he said that? Or is it a more...
She had a therapist already, and then I started going to see a therapist, and you work it out with your own therapist. Uh-huh. And then when we had really bad couples problems, we got together with our two therapists who happened to know each other, and we got to talk it out. And that helped too.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, man. I really...
Does a therapist ever go, Tom, you were wrong.
Yeah.
You need to be better.
Or like,
and then you're like, well, they're ganging up on me now.
Well, no, they didn't gang up on me in the room. No, they were great, but we only did like one or two sessions with the group. It's better. We both agreed that it was better to just kind of one on one with our own person.
Oh.
And then and that person has always had great advice for me and different approaches. And she's the one who said when my wife came home from Vegas, she was like, well, you were supposed to say, you know, that your job is tough, and I don't know how you do it, instead of being like, this was easy, because that's what pushed her buttons. That's what made her. Mad. I'm like, oh, you're
it's
right.
So funny because that's all I ever do. Every time she's away, I go, kids are fine with me. Maybe you're the problem, which is probably not the best thing.
That's not
the best thing to say to my wife. Yeah. I'm a passive aggressive Boston kid, Irish, with just, you know, we speak in horrible sentences to each other. That's how we deal with our friends. We're dicks to each other.
It's love.
It's just pure love. I only fuck with the ones I love, and my wife just isn't. She doesn't understand that quite. Yeah. All right. We have a couple questions to wrap this up. What are some traits that you hope your kids get from you?
From me, mm-hmm. I hope that they, you know, are just try to be prepared for situations. You know. This is me, the guy who like has to pack the back of the car.
What?
Like, I want them to have some sense of responsibility stuff that I learned over time. They obviously aren't going to learn it without the experience, but I hope that they do learn through experience, you know, that you got to be responsible for your own actions. And, you know, and I do think that, you know, being patient and calm in a situation is always better than just, you know, flying off the handle.
You do seem unflappable.
That's one thing I've got going for me.
You
can't flap me.
You cannot be flapped.
Nope.
Do you ever lose it?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, definitely. Well, that's why we have a safe word. That's the snuffleupagus moment is with me and my son when I have to, like, pack
the bag.
And
have you screamed at them and just like, shut, get in your room or I'll kill you?
Oh, yeah, but they know that when that happens, it's because I've been pushed to the point.
You've been flapped.
I've never even seen you scream in a movie. Is there film footage of you screaming at anyone?
No, never.
You're like the cool guy in town.
It's like Bigfoot. Never been seen.
Is that true? Yeah. You keep it hidden?
Yeah.
I can't believe it. Paparazzi hasn't got that.
Nope.
What is a trait of yours that you hope your kids don't get?
I don't know, man. There's so many. There's so many stupid things.
Being too perfect?
Yeah, being too cool,
man.
No, they need to be cooler than me. I'm such a nerd. I just hope that they're like...
You keep saying the word nerd like you're not a...
Yeah, I am.
Kids, everybody today's a nerd.
No, I'm not like doing the, I'm a nerd because I think nerds are like all of a sudden cool. No, I'm a nerd.
I mean, you're wearing glasses.
Nerd.
I get it. Nerd. You're nerdy. Andy's a nerd.
He has a fucking Boneyland t-shirt on.
Yeah,
for
how nerdy is that?
I guess. Mm-hmm. You're just, yeah, I guess. But you're a sports nerd. You're like, nerds don't like, they don't do fantasy football.
Sure they do. That's like the sporty nerd thing.
Yeah, is that the sporty nerd thing?
Yeah.
I'm so not a nerd then.
Uh-huh.
Oh,
you have to know all these stats and all this crap.
So you don't want your kids to, yeah. So that's it? That's the only trait you don't want your kids to have from you?
No, I mean, I definitely want them to, I want them to not be, you know, procrastinating like I did and, you know, lazy and just kind of like wait and see.
But that's why we became actors, because we procrastinate and I like to make a lot of money for doing very little work. That's pretty much why I got into this business. Last question. What is a mantra that you would want your kids to live their life by? Something that you've kind of...
The one that my mom taught me, which is, you know, be good to other people. I think that's a good...
When you said it earlier, I was like, that's the best one. It's so true. If I could go back in time and maybe be nicer to some people, I was kind of a jackass, I think, when I was younger.
Yeah.
And it took some age and eating crow to go, oh, you know what? Maybe I could be a nice... I think the kids, actually, having kids has made me a nicer person.
So I agree.
So you're not a jackass now.
Well, sometimes. I play a jackass, but I'm honestly way more grounded, and the joy of life means way more to me, and I want the best things in life. And I learned that a smile makes people do things for you more so than yelling at them.
I agree. I think in this day and age, when people put themselves first and they think they're supposed to put themselves first, it's actually better to think about others.
It's my brand, Tom. I got to monetize my brand. That's every 12-year-old today. I got a brand. I got to monetize. My guest today, one of the nicest people in show business. I'm sure you're sick of hearing that. Mr. Tom Everscott, thank you so much for coming and joining us today. When are you going to do a film where you're like a serial killer? Is there one in the...
Nah.
You should be cast as the serial killer, don't you think?
I just turn that stuff down. I just tell my reps.
No, you won't do it?
Pass on it. No, I'll do it.
But the Ted Bundy story? Not a chance?
You'd be perfect
because no one would see it coming. And then all of a sudden, ball peen hammer, back of the head. Did Tom Everett Scott just kill that lady? That seems so bizarre.
Yes, dear, he did.
All right, guys, thanks for tuning in. Be sure to rate and review us and tell your friends. And we'll catch you next time here on Father Time.